going down, and you're invited.
Let's see it.
Bruce is hungry!
Fuck the police!
Hello and welcome everyone to this audio report on the It's Going Down podcast. What follows is an interview we did with Karen from the Gainesville Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee, or IWOC, which is part of the IWW. They are also a part of Fight Toxic Prisons, or FTP. We're going to read a short statement that IWOC has just put out today. This is on January 19th, 2018. This gives a little bit more context to the conversation you're about to hear. They write, quote, "It's been a hard silence for the past 5 days since Operation Push launched a statewide prisoner strike in the Florida Department of Corrections prison system, coinciding with Martin Luther King Day. Information from prisoners is coming in at a much slower pace than people on the outside had anticipated, but reports are slowly and steadily making their way through the walls despite many obstacles. Thus far, we've heard from prisoners that there have been active participation or repression of some sort in the following prisons." Remember, this is in Florida. Santa Rosa, Jackson, Gulf, Hamilton, Avon Park, Franklin, Holmes, Everglades, Reception and Medical Center at Lake Butler, Liberty, Lowell, Columbia, Florida State Prison, Suwanee, Calhoun, and Martin. The list is growing by the day. This is information that they're getting from letters and also other forms of communication from inside the prison. What follows is mostly a report on how the state and the Florida correctional system has come down on perceived organizers in various forms. We thank you for listening. Let's get to it. Okay, we're joined here today with somebody that's an organizer with the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee of the Industrial Workers of the World, or IWOC of the IWW for short, also with Fight Toxic Prisons. We're going to be talking about what's been happening so far with Operation Push. You just want to introduce yourself real quick?
Sure. My name is Karen. I live here in Gainesville, Florida. Been working with IWOC and FTP locally and nationally for a couple years now.
As a bit of background, if you just want to talk about what is Operation Push and what kind of led up to this point on the 15th.
Sure. Operation Push is a campaign put together by a group of prisoners in Florida spread out across the state. They have clear-cut and simple demands that focus on payment for labor, an end to price gouging in the canteen, and a return to parole or some time of good behavior, gain time incentives, which we don't have here in Florida at the moment. Operation Push is a campaign of put together by prisoners across the state to bring attention to those demands and also to just the deplorable conditions in Florida prisons, being the third largest prison system in the state. In the country. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about what we know, what's been happening inside, and also kind of everything that's happened in solidarity outside. But let's just get into it. What do we know actually about what's been happening inside the prisons?
We've had almost like a complete blackout of communication since a couple days leading up to the 15th. We've got letters trickling in, via paper mail, which is almost all we have to rely on at this point. There have been major sweeps conducted. So any sort of modes of communication that we relied on up until this point are now, have ended, and as well as the legitimate forms of communication, such as like the prison phone, has been shut off all week. No way to hear from people on the inside. We do know that the Department of Corrections here in Florida have retaliated and have engaged in pretty hardcore repression tactics. Weeks leading up to the strike, they did sweeps and for contraband cell phones and locked up dozens of people who are on our mailing list or are contacts of ours through FTP or IWOC. Reports are just kind of trickling in via the mail. Some of our contacts have been interrogated. Many people have been put in confinement under investigation with no reason as to why they're being investigated. Others have been hit with cell phone charges based on social media posts that are tied to either the individual or the movement in a way that investigators have decided that certain posts are tied to certain individuals and have hit them with cell phone charges based on that, not from actually having a physical cell phone, which is something that we've dealt with a lot with the Florida Department of Corrections. So basically, weeks leading up to the strike, they did massive sweeps, tossed cells, took any sort of contraband communication devices, put people in confinement who were in correspondence with us and have been interrogating them. There have been threats made by the interrogating officers along the lines of, if you keep communicating with IWOC and FTP, this is going to continue to happen. We have had some key organizers transferred. Tons of people have been transferred away from their camps. Organized groups have been dispersed, and the loudest and strongest voices in the movement have been kept in confinement. Some of them have been propositioned with opportunities to work for the state against the movement, with promises of being sent to softer camps or sweeter camps, and have been told stuff like, your life could be really, really sweet if you work with us, versus the threats of, as long as you are in correspondence with Fight Toxic Prisons and IWOC, this is going to keep happening and you will lose game time and you will be kept in confinement. Those are clear and bold statements made by the Department of Corrections that have been reiterated to us via letters. But basically, the repression tactics of the state have been harsh and kind of complete. They have been watching our social media pages and keeping tabs on anybody who receives our literature through the mail. And all of those people have been either picked up or sent to new camps and interrogated about Operation Push.
For people listening, I mean, hearing this stuff, I mean, if you follow prison organizing, a lot of these tactics aren't anything new. But is this stuff legal? Are they following their own rules when they're doing some of this stuff?
Well, you know, they're labeling everything under a security threat group, which is what they call gangs here in Florida. They are in the Department of Corrections. Gangs are listed as security threat groups. This is something that we've seen in the past few years with the rise of prison organizing, is that they are, they're classifying people who are organizing on a political level as gang members. It's something that we saw happen with Kevin Rashid Johnson as a Black Panther, a member of the Black Panther Party. Basically, they're trying to classify organizers on the inside as gang leaders and supporters on the outside as gang members. So that is something that they're building up toward. Yeah, it's something that they're building up towards, and that we're getting reports in, you know, recently just surrounding Operation Push. Everything is going through the security threat unit, the security threat group unit, which is the gang unit. And we have organizers with FTP and IWOC in Gainesville have been mentioned by name. And the threats basically are that if you continue to work with this gang, you will be labeled as a gang member, and recommended for closed management status, which in Florida, closed management is, basically solitary confinement and loss of most privileges, which is something that Rashid has been since he got to the state. He's been on closed management. He has no mail, no phone privileges. Every piece of communication that goes through him has to be done through a lawyer. So that's what we're dealing with. They're basically threatening anybody who participates in Operation Push with that kind of future, that you'll be put on a closed management unit, labeled as a security threat group, and all communication will stop.
And do you think this, I mean, this is something that Sean Swain actually wrote an article about this. I encourage people to read about security threat groups, and his argument was that the expansion of this title to more and more groups of people is obviously makes the state happy, because, you know, it's just like job security. I mean, the more groups of people they can identify as gangs or label them as such, you know, the more they can justify their own existence. But do you feel like this push to label
political organizers as gang members or under this security threat group status? Is that just because they have the legal and physical infrastructure in place for that, or this is just new?
In my dealings with the Department of Corrections, is they have their own set of laws on the inside that don't necessarily transfer to the outside. As far as like legality of classifying political activists as gang members, I'm not sure how that translates to outside law. On the inside, it's very easy to kind of group everybody under that label. I think it is a new tactic for Florida. I think that because there isn't a real history of political organizing in Florida prisons, I think they're kind of grabbing at straws and using the avenues that are in place, you know, as far as dealing with legitimate, you know, maybe gang situations that they've dealt with in the past. They're taking that blueprint and kind of applying it to political organizing. I think it's just what they know, and it's an avenue that has worked for them before, and so they're applying it to this. I think if we were to challenge it, which we're looking into now, trying to see what sort of, you know, legal options we have, I don't think it's going to hold necessarily, because it is it's two completely different ballgames as far as, you know, gang activity and political organizing. I really think that they are just using the tools that are comfortable to them and that they are familiar with, not necessarily that they are going to be effective in this dynamic of political organizing. I mean, it's all very new to them and us. So I think we're all kind of trying to figure it out. Yeah, we've been working with some lawyers who, you know, we're really kind of trying to figure out the, you know, what it means to be a political prisoner and what rights you have as a political prisoner and how we can defend their rights, you know, in the face of these, you know, allegations of being a gang member when you're just trying to organize on a political, platform. So we've been working with lawyers through the, several different organizations, and, we have the people who are feeling the most retaliation right now. We have them reaching out to lawyers that we work with to ask for meetings, and hopefully we'll be able to, you know, piece together a legal plan to address this and to try to, you know, counteract this repression in a way that could be applied to all prison organizers, you know, to kind of like set some precedents for what prisoners are and allowed to do as far as refusing to work, as far as organizing, as far as their communication is concerned, you know.
And that in itself kind of opens up the question of, you know, prison slavery. Like, if a person is not allowed to refuse to work, I mean, what does that say about the condition that they're working in?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, let's switch gears here a little bit. Let's talk about action on the outside. As you said, information is still slowly trickling out from inside. If you want to go on at @IWW_IWalk, you can get updates there. There's also a couple other accounts that are putting out updates. IGD is trying to compile all these tweets and other social media updates on a page, Solidarity Grows as Florida Prisoners Launch Operation Push. But if you just want to get into it a little bit about what's been happening on the other side of the walls, starting on MLK Day on January 15th.
Yeah, so on MLK Day, we had a couple of solidarity actions. We had one at the Reception Medical Center, which is in North Central Florida, just north of Gainesville. It is a prison that treats people who have chronic or, you know, medical needs that go beyond of the average institution. You know, if somebody requires medical care beyond the scope of what their prison can provide, they get sent to the Reception Medical Center. The other reason you would end up there is if you're just entering the system, because it is a reception center. So we held a outside solidarity demonstration there because a couple of reasons. It is a camp that has a proposed phosphate mine bordering the western side of the prison. So here in Florida, we are one of two places in the United States that has phosphate deposits. And that's something that has completely devastated our water supply and our spring system and our aquifer in South Florida. And now the mining companies have set their sights on North Florida, right next to the reception medical center. So we chose that prison because of the phosphate mine proposition, and also because recently several guards at the reception medical center were found to be KKK members plotting to kill Black inmates after their release from the Department of Corrections. So we thought that would be a good place to plan a solidarity action. It had an amazing turnout, tons of people, tons of noise. They shut down the prison for the day of our action. There was a complete lockdown. No, the phones were off. And on that same day, there was also a solidarity action planned at Everglades Correctional Institution down in Miami. So we had a lot of turnout. I mean, tons of people showed up and made a lot of noise. The following day, Tuesday, the 16th in Tallahassee, we decided to have a demonstration at the Department of Corrections headquarters and to present the demands of Operation Push to the Department of Corrections. You know, they silenced the prisoners' voices with transfers and solitary confinement. And when we got there, they had locked the front doors to their offices. So they, you know, pretty much silenced our voices on the outside as well, and we're kind of just refusing to deal with us, you know. So we spent we rallied there, and we had a lot of people turn out, and we spent several hours occupying the lobby at the directions and trying to engage them in a conversation about the demands that the prisoners have set forth, and you know, forcing them to look at this issue and to at least give a statement. On it around 3 o'clock, it turned a little bit tense. They began antagonizing protesters. They opened the doors finally after being locked all day and tried to pull people in, which was pretty scary. It seemed like an attempt at just getting people isolated and an easy arrest situation. So it ended up getting physical, and they had a ton of cops in a back room ready to rush us to occupy the lobby, occupy the buildings, force the doors open. We got in there. We delivered our statement. We made a bunch of noise. They ended up arresting one person and physically harming several others in their attempt to get to that one person that they arrested. And it got some good media coverage, and it was really validating for a lot of prisoners, as we've heard in the days following, you know, to see people on the outside showing up at Department of Corrections headquarters and, you know, demanding a meeting with the secretary, Julie Jones, who has completely ignored us so far. So that was it was a pretty awesome moment when we were able to, you know, disrupt their business as usual, which is kind of the plan, and to force them to, you know, come to the table, which unfortunately, you know, it didn't happen that day. But I've been, a lot of ex-prisoners and current prisoners have reached out since Tuesday and have expressed their, you know, gratitude and just overwhelming, you know, support of the movement, seeing people on the outside just forcing the Department of Corrections to make a statement and to pay attention, you know, to these issues.
Yeah, there's been a lot of solidarity actions. Also, even outside of Florida, there's been people rallying, holding banners, dropping banners, and just making a lot of noise for Operation Push. I was just curious if you can talk about, how do you feel as far as, like, organizational-wise, like, IWOC and other groups are in a position of strength, you know, looking back at the September 9th prison strike till now, like, what's changed for people doing support work on the outside? Is it pretty much the same, or are people kind of better prepared for these situations because of everything that they've gone through, or how would you assess the situation?
Oh, I'd say we're definitely more prepared. I mean, there's no way Operation Push would have gained the traction or the attention that it has if it wasn't for previous actions and effort. You know, I mean, I feel like it's building towards something that is, it's, you know, what we're seeing right now with Operation Push is just another link in the chain towards, you know, a huge movement building. The work that was put into September 9th and the attention that it drew nationwide, we've definitely been able to build on that. I don't think that we would have been able to get so much media attention this time around if it wasn't a continuation of an effort. And I feel like that's where Operation Push is also. It's a continuation of an effort. You know, Operation Push, it's an economic strategy. You know, it's not the difference between this and September 9th is, and I'm speaking mostly to Florida because that's what I see. That's what I hear about. In Florida on September 9th, you know, people are sick of it. People are frustrated. The tensions are high. And the way that manifested was in property destruction and fires and floodings and ultimately violence once the guards introduced it. So this time around with Operation Push, it looks a lot different. Prison uprisings that accompanied September 9th, they were very visible. You know, they got labeled as riots by Department of Corrections, and not having that clear destruction has made it a little bit harder to quantify participation in Operation Push because it is like an economic strategy where people are just not going to work and not shopping in the commissary. So there's not this huge, you know, violent uprising that people can report and that tells us that this is happening. You know, it's just, it's harder to quantify. It's something that we're not going to be able to really understand the effects of Operation Push until we see the, you know, the profit margins of Geo Group, CCA, Keith, who runs the commissary, and Securus, and, you know, those companies who profit off the services that mass incarceration guarantee. So it's very different in that this is a long-term economic strategy that is going to be spread out over the entire year and then picked up from there, I'm sure. Whereas in you know, the Attica anniversary uprisings, it was more of a, you know, physical property damage, frustrations just hitting a breaking point, you know, where we've had some time, we've worked, we've organized, we've built those relationships, and we have prisoners engaging in a economic warfare more than a physical and a violent warfare. So it's harder to quantify it, but I think it's going to hit the powers that be in their wallets more than previous actions. And so we just need to kind of like sit tight and support and pay attention and see, you know, what we're able to accomplish. I know that there are lots of prisoner organized, groups out there that are calling for economic, you know, boycotts or work strikes throughout the year. And I like to think Operation Push as like kind of like kicking that off, like getting 2018 started, you know? But yeah, I think we're going to have to kind of stay tuned to really see the effects. It's not so immediate and obvious as, you know, fucking shit up. Like that went down on 9, you know? It's a little bit different strategy this time. So longer, I think, to see the outcome.
Well, what happens now? I mean, this has been a call for a month of action. What is next as far as Operation Push, as far as IWOC can see it?
You know, talking to a lot of the Operation Push organizers, they are very supportive of some of the other call-outs that have happened nationwide. There have been call-outs from Texas to kind of focus on some of the important dates throughout the year of prisoner organizing. And there have been call outs from other prisoner organizing groups to do kind of month on month off economic boycott. I think that Operation Push should be looked at as a starting point as a kickoff to a whole year of action that here in Florida, we're really ready to get behind.
Awesome. And I was curious if you could comment, just the other day, IWOC announced that they chartered their first in-prison
union
of IWOC. Can you just talk a little bit about that and what the significance of this?
The significance of IWOC and IWW in general is just, you know, it's the only union that recognizes prison workers and prison work as labor, you know, as actual workers. It's the only union that recognizes prisoners as workers. I think that's major in and of itself. Having the first chartered branch inside a prison, you know, it sets an example for, you know, what we can accomplish. This is a major organizing tool. IWOC is a phenomenal vehicle for prisoner organizing. And I just think this is just the beginning. And I think it's just an example for, you know, prisoners across the country and as of what's possible, you know, if we work together and pull our resources and we use this union as a vehicle to get on the same page across the nation and make our actions, you know, really count, really hit them where it hurts. And, you know, it's economic. I mean, withholding labor is the only currency that have left to prisoners. So the fact that there's a branch inside and that is taken off and happening, that's really exciting for, you know, prisoners everywhere. And I think this is a phenomenal tool that we can make much use of, with especially capitalizing on the momentum behind prison organizing that is happening right now.
Yeah, it's super exciting. It's amazing to see it grow and spread. Also, there's going to be a call-in campaign on Monday, January 22nd, if you want to give that a plug and tell people a little bit about what's going on with that. It is connected to Operation Push as well.
Yeah, we're asking people to call Secretary Julie Jones, the Secretary of the Florida Department of Corrections, and express support for Operation Push and the demands that they have set forth. You know, these aren't crazy demands. To be paid for your labor is just the basis of, you know, humanity, of giving people who have otherwise zero power and resources, you know, a semblance of dignity. I think that the call in on Monday is really just to go to the Florida Department of Corrections and let them know that you support Operation Push and Florida prisoners and prisoners everywhere to be afforded any amount of dignity. If we really believe that this is about rehabilitation and this is about improving safety in our communities, then that should be, you know, that should be an easy task.
Right. And just last question. I mean, you've been talking a lot about how the prison officials are threatening inside organizers with telling them not to associate with IWOC and other anti-capitalist groups. I mean, how, in your opinion, how do the prison officials view organizations like IWOC or any other sort of groups, either on the inside or the outside, that are actively organizing to better conditions for people that are incarcerated?
I mean, you know, they've got like two different narratives. You know, they have the thing they have to say when they're working, which is, you know, stop. But when I discuss this with prison workers here in Florida, you know, actual staff, they're kind of supportive of it because they're getting fucked too. You know, they're getting treated like garbage. They're getting sent into a dangerous environment daily and they're getting paid garbage for it. So it's a pretty fine line, actually, between prisoners and prison workers here in Florida. Everybody is, you know, everybody's poor. Everybody's being exploited and everybody's being taken advantage of by the state. So I like to think that a lot of staff and workers are just like one step away from being on board with our movement. I actually meet a lot of them that have managed to come up with other economic means of survival and not work for the prison state. And I mean, the minute they get out of that job, they're on board with our movement, you know, because they see how fucked up it is in there. They see how disgusting conditions are. And they know the score. So, prison workers here in Florida, they're poor people. They live in the same communities as prisoners are pulled from, you know, it's actually, it's quite amazing. I feel like we're on the brink of like a total revolution, because the people in the prisons are suffering conditions that are almost equivalent of the people out of prisons. And, you know, if we can harness all of that anger and frustration and, a lot of prison workers kind of take me to the side and are like, "Hey, I believe in what you're doing, but I'm scared." Like that happens a lot. That happens a lot. Even at our demo at a reception and medical center earlier in the week, we had a prison guard, you know, doing his job. And the minute he clocked out, he pulled over and walked over and was like, "How can I get involved? I'm so down with this. Like everything that happens in there is fucked, you know?"
Well, listen, it's so inspiring to just hear the first couple of days of the strike and just everything going on. I mean, I think a lot of people going into this knew that there was going to be lots of repression, but it's definitely very heavy to listen to everything they're throwing at these people. They are going to be transferred and moved, and definitely people will have to be on the lookout for how to support people. And incarceratedworkers.org and also iWalk on Twitter is a great resource. Of course, you can always go to IGD. We'll be retweeting and sharing updates on different social media platforms. But anything else you want to talk about before we sign off as far as Operation Push or any of the work that iWalk and other groups are doing?
Well, I guess it's important to, you know, say that there are people, we have had reports of people refusing to work, not shopping in the commissary, you know, that is happening throughout the state. It's just that the state has been really good at employing scab labor and spreading everybody around and transferring people as far as the you know, the pockets of organized groups that we had throughout the state. You know, they've dispersed everybody and have brought in other prisoners to do the work, you know, so that any sort of participation and activity in the strike is kind of hard to notice. You know, so I think that's important to say that just, you know, despite their efforts to kind of quiet the movement, it's growing and it's, I think it's unstoppable. I think, if they're going to locking up these people, then they're going to have to get used to this many people coming at them for, you know, answers and change. And I think we're seeing, seeing that in the streets.
I mean, there's simply more of us than there are of them. And I mean, their answer for everything is just repression. And I mean, you can't have a society where you just squeeze more and more people dry and push them to the margins. And your answer is just put them in a prison. I mean, eventually that system is going to break apart on its own internal contradictions. And they know that. I think that's why this system is just so scared all the time. And I mean, they're constantly trying to move people around, push them to the side, or in some cases, you know, offer them, you know, the carrot instead of the stick.
When a state, you know, when our Department of Corrections locks their front doors in our state capitol, you know, when they lock their doors to their citizens who have come for, you know, to have a discussion and to discuss, you know, change and realistic solutions to these really fucked up problems, you know, they lock their doors. I think that's really indicative of that they don't have the answer and they are scared. I mean, even in just the interrogations that I'm finally getting word of, they say things like, "This movement is growing." This, you know, they've even reiterated the time of actions that have occurred over the last couple of years. And all they have are threats, you know, it's telling people, if you talk to these people, then you'll be sent to a shitty camp. You'll have your privileges revoked. Well, I mean, come on. What privileges are being revoked? Like, what do they have left? You know, at a certain point, when you have nothing left, then you've got nothing to lose, you know, but our chains. Like, we've got nothing to lose but our chains. I mean, I like to think about that one Operation Push organizer. He really kind of tried to focus on the fact that this isn't about going without, you know, we're going to give up our commissary. We're going to give up our phone calls. But what it really is finally taking control, finally having power. You know, it's not about going without. It's about taking back and having power that has been stripped from you. you know, fuck their commissary, fuck their gain time and these trinkets that they dangle, you know, like it's not about going without. It's about finally taking back and having power, you know, in an otherwise powerless situation. So, yeah, they're scared for sure. And I think we need to capitalize.
Last question I was going to ask is, I remember during the September 9th, 2016 strike, a lot of people were asking, you know, where's the media? No one's reporting on this, you know, outside of, you know, grassroots media. But, you know, this time around, there was a lot of media that was on top of this. You know, why? What's changed? Is it the fact that you can watch the 13th on Netflix, or the fact that we had a massive prison strike, or is it all these things?
I think it's all these things. I think it can't be ignored. Like, it's too big to be ignored. And yeah, it's on everybody's tongues. You know, maybe the 13th helped that a little bit, but I really think that when you incarcerate this many people, it's just, it can't be ignored, you know? It's too big to hide. And,
yeah. Thanks for joining us. Anything else you want to add, or any shout outs, or any resources that you want to plug as far as what people can do to learn more?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I mean, you know, just the obvious. I would definitely check out incarceratedworkers.org and fighttoxicprisons.org. Got a lot of good stuff out there. The Dream Defenders are an amazing organization that have been key to Operation Push here in Florida. You know, this is a movement that affects, you know, poor people and people of color. So I think, you know, the groups that organize on those lines should be at the forefront, and here in Florida they are.
Yeah, and it's great to see also just so many things popping off in the South. I feel like there's always a look to the coast or big cities, but it's like there's so much stuff happening in this country that like most people aren't even watching.
Yeah, I mean, like, and especially in prison abolition and prison work, you know, Florida Department of Corrections was born in 1868. You know, just a few short years after slavery was ended. It is, you know, the lines are drawn. It's so obvious. Yeah, down here, you know, shit is rough. So I think that this, it should be on the forefront of prison abolition work and all these groups that are participating and lending, you know, energy and support to this movement. Like, I think this is the place where it's going to happen.
All right. Thank you for listening all the way to the very, very end. And thank you for Karen for coming on from the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee of Gainesville, also Fight Toxic Prisons, or FTP. If you want to find updates for Operation Push, check hashtag Operation Push on all social media platforms. Check out IGD_news. We'll be RTing and sharing updates about the prison strike, and also an invaluable resource is at IWW_IWOC, which is IWOC's Twitter. They're blasting out updates on both sides of the prison walls about the strike. Check them out. Also, incarceratedworkers.org. We'll be sharing a lot of their articles, but you can go straight to their website. And hey, if you enjoy It's Going Down, if you like these podcasts, if you use the site as a resource to find out what's happening in terms of social movements and social struggles across so-called North America, go to itsgoingdown.org/shop. You can sign up to be a monthly donator or just give us a one-time donation. Also, check out our fine selection of shirts and stickers. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll see you next time.